Okay, listeners, you're very welcome back, guys, to episode 3, season 2, right, Behind the White Line. And we're here with Jake Flannery, Munster player. But I suppose we'll kick it off with maybe asking you a little bit about the future. So a couple of weeks ago, or not so long ago, you signed a very exciting contract. You're going to move. I suppose Munster fans will be a little bit disappointed to see a Tipperary man leave the ranks. But I suppose an exciting opportunity for you, Jake, moving up to Ulster. And I suppose they had a great one, didn't they, land the week? So, you know, they're kind of looking, they're doing well. So how are you feeling about that? How are you feeling about the future, about your career path going forward?
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. I've spoken to the coach, Dan McFarland, up there. I've spoken to a few of the players up there. They've a brilliant backline. Their results through the year have been outstanding. And to beat Chalouse, it's an unreal result, isn't it? So, no, I'm really excited to go up and give it a right crack.
So I suppose, looking at that a little bit more in depth, I suppose, what will your markers for next season be? Do you sit down and set yourself goals at your professional sports player? Do you sit down and set yourself goals at the start of the season? Do you say, I want to play this many games, I want to score this many points?
I definitely do. I definitely set goals. It's difficult to set an amount of games you want to reach. You've obviously a rough target in mind, but a lot of that can be out of your control. So it's more like things I can control. So say goal kicking percentage would be something I'd set. Targets in the gym I could set. Fitness things I could set. Even integrating next year will be something I'll target. Get to know the lads.
Yeah.
Get stuck into the culture. Really throw myself at that for the first few weeks so that I can get my feet under me and get comfortable.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of underestimate that part of it as well. You know, that's a great point you just spoke, but there, Jake, the targets in terms of making friendships, making connections, embedding yourself in the community, which is going to take, you'll have to learn, you're well familiar with the Munster rugby culture, and I suppose you'll have to learn the Ulster rugby culture now. And it's a very strong culture up there, and they do love their rugby, and I suppose you'll be looking forward to playing up there as well, home games and stuff like that. Is there any player that you're looking forward to kind of whipping ball out to or playing alongside? Is there anybody that stands out to you that you're looking forward to linking up with?
There's a few of that back line. I played with Stuart Moore under 20s, and he was deadly now. He's a great player. Robert Balakoon, seen him at the weekend, I think he had a hat-trick. James Hume, Mike Lowry, these fellas just been capped for Ireland. They're very, very exciting backs. And they have a powerful pack as well. It's a great team. It's a great team to be joining.
And I suppose just the last thing on that then, Jake, is what was kind of going around in your mind in terms of making that decision to go up to Ulster? Obviously, it's a big move to kind of turn your back on Munster for the time being, leaving your home province. So what were you sitting down? Were you writing a for and against list, or what was going through your mind at that time?
Yeah, well, the main reason is potential game time. My opportunities at Munster have been somewhat limited through different reasons. I was stuck in South Africa for a few weeks with COVID.
Yeah.
And that really hit a few of my opportunities to play.
They spoke about that. There was a few players that would have got a little bit more. That kind of didn't do Zeba any favours either,
it was
did it?
Disaster. Yeah, myself and Zeba. There were a few more of us stranded out there.
Yeah.
Roundtree was there as well. He was stuck out there. That kind of just put a few weeks of a gap in the season where we just lost that continuity from training, and you have to get your training load back up, different things like that. But no, going up to Ulster, it's more a new opportunity for me. Great club, chance to get in the field more, because that's what I'm desperate to do. For me, it's all about playing. And when my game time is limited for whatever reason, that's not ideal for me, so I'm going to try and go to a situation where I can play as much as I can.
Brilliant. Jay, thanks for joining us as well. So, come here, I just wanted to talk about, you kind of spoke before the podcast about what way does it kind of work between going from Munster to Ulster, or what way does is there a meeting set up, or what way does that work?
There's a few parties involved. Firstly, the Munster staff were heavily involved. They were talking to me about potentially signing on, what are your plans for next year? And I just had to weigh that up, and then there's a few other clubs. I have an agent, a few other clubs beyond to him, because they know my contract's up, and there was a bit of interest from England, a bit of interest from France. So I had to just kind of weigh all that up. The IRFU were chatting to me a good bit as well about potentially moving somewhere in Ireland to play a bit more as well. So when I weighed all that up, like my goal at the end of the day is to play for Ireland. Yeah. So if there's a chance to play more and increase my chances to do that, then that was the decision for me.
But like we were saying before, it's a great vote of confidence from the IRFU to keep you in Ireland. You know, they're not going to leave you after England or France, like, you know.
Yeah. But we're actually here in Kilfeagle Rugby Club now, and there's a framed jersey up on the wall up there. Yeah. It's belonging to you. Yeah. Could you talk us through your first experience of wearing that jersey? We kind of spoke to our Amy Lee Murphy Crowe, and we asked her about what it's like to represent Ireland, like, you know. Yeah. So how was it for you?
Kind of mad. So my first game was against England in Cork in the under 20 Six Nations, and you don't think about it too much. It's more like we had a good few pre Six Nations games, and we'd a load of training camps, so I didn't really think about it at the time. It was more like, this is my team I'm on now, this is like a club team, you're just part of it, you're wearing the jersey. But then afterwards you can kind of look back and say, geez, that was something special. It was just class time. It was deadly.
I think for you're so early in your career as well, it's just part of, it's one stage in the process of leading up to playing for Ireland, hopefully at senior level. And as you said, when you're a bit older, you might look back and think, geez, that was brilliant. But you are amazing that season, and you had a great season, and you're a massive part of that winning Six Nations team. But I think we were just going to chat as well, going back to your kind of Tipperary heritage a little bit as well. And you were all-stars, or you were kind of an all-rounder in terms of sports growing up, and you played a bit of football and a bit of everything, really. But Burns, you had a kind of a question in terms of that, didn't you?
Yeah, I suppose, look, you're a proud Benjamin, proud Tipperary man, and all the rest of it. So I know obviously you went off to Rockwell, but was it always going to be rugby? I know you played a bit of minor football with Tip.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I actually remember I was listening to your podcast. I was listening to it before you asked me on it, actually, but I remember Baca talking about one of his favourite wins against Bansha.
I'm
playing that game.
You've definitely listened to it.
Sickened. Sickened, yeah. But no, I was mad at football. I played a bit of hurling too. I wasn't a hectic hurler, but
yeah,
I was all right. I loved football. And under 18, there was kind of a, geez, what are you going to do now? Because I was playing minor football, and there were Munster under 18 schools trials on. I ended up missing one of the rugby trials because we had the championship match with Tip, and I didn't make the under 18s that year. So that was a real time where I was like, right, what are you going to make a decision here? My best sporting days were in rugby, and I loved playing rugby here in Kilfeagle. Like, my dad coached me since I was 5 till about like 10 or 11. I just loved rugby. I loved watching Munster winning Highland Cup 2006, 2008, like. So when I got to that decision, 18, it was like, no, I wanna go all in on rugby and see if I can make it.
What was the one we were chatting about, the Munster final win last year?
Yeah, like, I suppose.
Oh yeah.
You know, you would have known a couple of lads that were playing. Maybe obviously Jack Harney's involved there now. Conor Kennedy's involved. You know, you would have played with some of these lads. Was there? Look, you're a professional sports person now. Is there any tinge of regret, maybe, seeing those lads? Because call a spade a spade, you probably, you'd have been there or thereabouts senior football with Tipperary.
You know what? There wasn't. I was just genuinely delighted for them boys, because Harney, Connell, I'd still be good friends with them. Like, I'd still meet them a good bit at the weekends. Like, so I was thrilled for them.
Yeah.
And even David Power, I had David Power when I was minor. So no, I was genuinely just delighted for them boys. Like, I wasn't regretting my decisions. Like, you know, the way you have to look at it is, once you make a decision, you just have to make that the right decision after that. So no, like, I was delighted for them at the time, but no, I wasn't regretting. No.
Talk us through that. You said your dad coached you.
Yeah.
I play soccer, indoor soccer, with your father.
Lunatic. Yeah.
Lunatic.
Yeah.
So what was that like, to be influenced by your dad? Was he pushing rugby around like that, or was he kind of sports?
He never really pushed rugby. He was just, try everything. My mum was the same. They were great. Like, they just said, try everything. Like, I did a bit of music, did dancing, everything. Yeah. Just find what you like and give that a go. So
they're going to have to talk to us a small bit about the dancing.
No. Brutal dancer. That ended very quick. No, but it was just try everything. Like, dad was more of a hurler himself. Like, he played a bit of rugby, but once we got stuck into rugby, we just loved that. He didn't never push me or anything, but what he was very good as a coach was just making it enjoyable. Like, he'd build a great culture in the team. And I still remember some of the teams I played with in Kilfeagle. We had great days out, like. Brilliant crack.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your father, great coach, and obviously, you know, a big part of your life and very supportive to you and stuff like that. But in going up through the ranks, kind of, I suppose, thinking about the title of the podcast, is there any... It can be in the Munster setup, it could be over in Rockwell. Talk to us about your rugby education over in Rockwell and any coaches or managers that stood out that really you learned a lot from, or maybe older players or things like that.
Yeah. No, geez, there's loads. Like, at the end of the day, from my point of view, it's just about working hard and trying to take every opportunity you get. But I think with professional sports, there's a lot of people involved and you need good people behind you. Yeah. Like, I had some brilliant coaches. Like, when I started going to Rockwell, I probably would have just tried to run everything, just enjoy playing rugby.
Yeah.
But as you get older and you progress, you understand, you actually have to think about what you're doing sometimes. Like, you can't just
go
out and enjoy. Some fellas still play like that, but now I'd like to think I'd approach it with a bit more of a tactical eye and a better understanding of it.
There's 80 minutes to win a game. Like, you don't have to win it in the first 8 minutes. I often say, you know, so exactly. And were you successful at Senior Cup at your time in Rockwell?
No, so... when I was in third year, playing Junior Cup, they won it with Senior Cup. They had a brilliant team. They had, like, the likes of Bill Johnson, played for Munster, Sean O'Connor, Dermot Barron, had a few brilliant players. And then when I went into transition year, we had a good team, but we lost a few from the previous year. But we had a lot of the same pack, but we were just beaten by a Crescent team in the day. And fifth and sixth year, we won a City Cup in sixth year. Actually beat Glen Stahl in the City Cup that year when I was in sixth year, who went on to win the Senior Cup. They beat us by 2 points in the first round. So we had a chance in sixth year, but it didn't turn out. Like, I did love playing rugby in Rockwell. I had some great coaches again. Dennis Leamy, Kevin Leamy, brilliant coaches. Like Mark Butler, learned a lot from them.
And how do they approach it in Rockwell? Like, because obviously we went to school in Tip Town there, and you're hearing that kind of, they're nearly professional over there.
Like. Yeah, it is. Like, it is. It's as professional as you can get for 13-year-olds. Throughout Rockwell, I was playing every sport. So I was training 2 or 3 times a day. Like, so you train every day in rugby in Rockwell. And then say I was coming home in fifth and sixth year on a Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday playing minor football. Like, so I was wrecked. So at the end, I had to kind of pick one or the other.
Yeah.
I was just doing too much. Like, and you're trying to play football and hurling for Banshee as well. Like, it was a lot. But it is full on. Like, we were gymming twice a week at 7 in the morning, and then you'd be doing a pitch session 4 o'clock the minute you finish school to 5 o'clock, and then you're into after school study. So the day was just kind of full.
But talk to us then, Jake, about just your kind of your week to week stuff at the moment. Say you're what, like today, for example, we asked you to be on the podcast today. You trained this morning, again in the evening. Is that kind of the general thing, 5 to 6 days a week?
So the way it works is we go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and then the weekend varies. So Monday is relatively light. You're kind of learning all your detail for the week. You a gym session, and you might do 2 gym sessions on Monday.
How is your detail delivered to you?
Yes.
Like, is it, you email the PowerPoint or yeah, is it so
you'd
chats
be, you'd
or
be
what
sent,
is it?
You'd be sent PowerPoints to different plays. You'd have a meeting in the morning, you talk through them, you might do a walkthrough, and then it's going out in the pitch and doing them at 60-70%.
Yeah.
And so then come Tuesday, everyone's expected to know everything, so you can basically go flat out and not almost play a match, not full contact, but basically full match with the new plays or whatever. That's the way it is Monday to Tuesday, and then Thursday.
It must be really hard to learn. I know, like for myself, coaching rugby in a big rugby school in Scotland, like trying to teach the boys playbooks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you find it challenging, like, to be up to speed with that most of the time, or is it?
Well, like, it is and it isn't. Like, I love that. Like, and I love watching rugby and seeing, say, the All Blacks doing a certain move. Oh, geez, we might try that weekend with Shannon. Do you know, stuff like that happens. So no, I genuinely love that, and I love watching. You might watch another team play. So, for example, we're playing Highfield with Shannon in a few weeks. You might watch Highfield and try and come up with a move to get to where the space they're leaving.
Yeah.
And I love doing stuff like that. So, for me, it's not really. It's kind of like you drill it in for a couple of weeks at the start of the season. And the main detail stays the same. It's just a few line-out plays that change, whatever, week to week.
So you get your book or your playbook at the start of the week, and then what? Then from that, then
you roll through the week. We'd have Wednesdays off. Today you're finished early enough with a gym and a pitch, and a few meetings done by. I think we were done today by 1:30, and then fellas who are playing club, say aren't playing for Munster the weekend, will go out to their AIL clubs and they'll train tonight, and then you might have tomorrow off, play Saturday. That's kind of how the week works.
And how, like, is at the start of the week, is Jake, you can go out to Shannon now this weekend? Or
so
how
it's,
is it when
they don't, like, they don't announce the team properly. So Monday, Tuesday, you're not entirely sure what you're doing at the weekend. Okay. Like, you'll hit, show, you won't train with Shannon Tuesday night, but say I might go out to training and watch training and see if pick up if they're doing anything new. And then you're kind of making sure you're on top on a Munster detail in case you're playing. And then kind of Thursday, you know your story, what you're going to be doing the weekend. So that's kind of, you just have to stay on top of both. And it challenges that too sometimes.
Absolutely,
like, but,
yeah, I can imagine so.
And, like, obviously, we were kind of saying, like, I was saying this the podcast or before, like, you know, your role now as a professional athlete has kind of changed to when you were a bit younger, where you were first naming the team sheet. You know, no matter what, you were there, you were starting, you were playing 70 minutes. You know, the least would be maybe 60, 70, and you'd more often not be playing 80 minutes. How do you find your role now as kind of, I suppose, to be honest, most of the time it's making sure that the boys who are going out in the field for the full 60 or 80 are ready for it.
Yeah.
And then you're waiting for your opportunities. How do you cope with that role?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was chatting before the podcast, but you come into the system like wanting to be the starting guy. Of course you do, and I still do. It's more, you understand how roles work in a squad, and roles are selected. So whether you're the squad guy who might play 5 to 10 games, or you're whatever, you kind of just have to nail your role. So if I'm playing, say, 5 to 10 games this year, I got to make sure that them 5 to 10 are the best I can possibly make them. And for the rest, then I'm making sure I'm on top of the Munster detail. Say if there's an injury, I'm straight in, or I'm preparing the team at the weekend the best I can.
Do you find that stressful because your opportunities are limited?
Yeah.
Do you find that a really pressurized environment then, because you're going in, say, you know, I'm only going to get a limited amount of touches on the ball, or I'm only going to get limited. So how do you find knowing that I need to be amazing all the time?
That can be a challenge. You just have to have a good understanding of it. Like, if you go out and play like you want to light the world on fire every single time you get the ball, like, that isn't always the best option. If the best option is to take our time here, slow it down, catch the ball, kick it out, okay, you didn't make a highlight reel, but you did the right thing for the team. You just have to understand that that's your role.
And often managers are looking for that as much as...
Exactly.
Because it's easy of you to go and go, I'm going to fucking do like...
Yeah, I'm
going to
throw a 30-yard pass here, or crossfield kick or whatever.
And is that something that maybe that you've done in the beginning at your time at Munster and you've kind of learned over the last 2 years?
Yeah, probably. Like, I wouldn't say I'd ever be afraid to try things. So I'm always just trying to read what's happening in front of me and do the best thing possible in that situation. The thing about the role is it can be quite difficult to accept if you have a smaller role in a squad. And that potentially is part of the reason I'm moving, because I want a bigger role in the squad. I think I'm up to it. So I'm going up to Ulster, hopefully trying to chase a bigger role and see where that takes me.
Must be hard though, I suppose, at the start of the week that you have to be at it on a Tuesday or Monday and a Tuesday, whereas maybe a more established player can go through the gears for the weekend, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, well, like, they're all professionals in fairness. Yeah. You know, like, 90% of the lads are on the point. Like,
every day.
Do you know, it's like you have a limited amount of training sessions. Say you might train light Monday, Tuesday and Thursday, and then you're facing Exeter at the weekend. There's no point in wasting reps. Like, every rep is going to count. So no matter who you are, like, you have to be spot on.
And just in terms of, in terms of culture and that, has anyone ever come into you and said, right, lads, even though you might be in the squad on the weekend, it's up to you now to get the lads ready? Like, that's often spoken
that
about.
That does. Excuse me. That happens quite a lot, where, like, say the seconds or whatever that aren't playing as much for Munster, we are actually almost a little like mini squad on our own. Like, we get to know each other, and like, you can see a fella, he's struggling today because he knows, geez, he mightn't play this weekend. You just give a fella a pat in the back and say, right, we're on it this week. Yeah. Like, let's give it for 10 minutes and then we're done. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So there's times when that happens. And so that's all part of it, like, getting through it as a group.
It's human nature.
Yeah, I think you display a lot of maturity there to understand your role in the squad. It's really good, and I can see how that can be difficult. So
And you're never content with it, like,
no, of course you're not. Oh, jeez, everybody wants to be the fella who's doing the thing, like, do you know what I mean? But
I think when it gets to that level, in my head, I've never reached that level, obviously. Mm. But I mean, I think the individual is always trying to just prove a point.
Oh, yeah.
You did speak as well about maybe the team ethic, and yeah. that you spoke a while ago about in the dressing room, what way players sit beside each other and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I love that. Would you mind?
So yeah, you were saying about how some clubs have...
Yeah, Leicester Tigers have the first team, or the starting 15 change in one dressing room. And the subs train in the other dressing room. Yeah. That's just part of Leicester Tigers culture, but
Wales have a kind of a having their partition then as well.
Yeah,
so first 15.
Yeah. So not like in Munster training day to day, you could be sitting anywhere. Like you have your own locker, but it's random. Like you go in and sit anywhere at the start of the season, and that's your locker for the rest of the year.
Right.
But on match day, then they kind of submerge the subs in between the starting 15. So if I'm say starting 10, the sub 10 will be beside me, the 9 will be beside me, the sub 9 will be beside him, and you're kind of split up along like that. So that way, if I come in at half time, the sub 10 might go to me, the left winger is hide or spacing behind him, for example.
Yeah.
It's like at least we're beside each other, we can have that
conversation
and we can attack the thing together. Like there's a fairly strong culture in Munster, I would say that. It's all about the team, and no matter who's in the jersey that week, let's all three or four out halves, whatever, let's put everything into getting him in the best setup that he can for the weekend. Because at the end of the day, everyone wants the Munster to win.
The further you go on in a competition, the more games there's going to be, which means there's more possibility of you playing.
Exactly. And the other side, the more, say, if I'm not playing, but I'm engaging in the game and I'm watching and I'm trying to see stuff as if I was playing, you're only getting better, you're only learning.
And if you come on, you can see. I think you were chatting about this, Burnsy. We were having a coffee earlier on up in O'Sugar O'Coffee, so there's the plug. You can send the money in there to Revolut. But we were kind of saying, what's the Peter Mahoney thing you were on about? We were saying, how does it feel like when you're telling O'Mahony to get over there and hit that rocket. You're starting out in your career, this fella's an absolute animal of Munster rugby. You're Peter, if you don't hit that rock the next time, or get outside me or whatever.
I didn't really struggle with that, to be honest. To go into a scenario like that, and you have to back yourself, because it's a short career, so you have to make the most of it. You have to go in, and if you're out half and you're barking orders, it doesn't matter who it is. Of course there's respect, and of course there's understanding. If Pete says to me, you're potentially doing this wrong, of course I'm going to take that on board. But at the same time, if I'm out half and I'm meant to be bossing it, then you have to be stuck in there.
I'd imagine he'd give out if you didn't say it.
Exactly. He'd be like, you got to tell me where I'm going.
Well, forwards love to know where, that's what you, forwards like being told what to do.
Exactly. And someone like Pete, he's just a good listener. Yeah. So it's not like he's thinking, who's this young fella telling me what to do? He knows that's my role. And he's almost expecting it from me, like you said.
I suppose, like you said with the team ethic, though, what he imagines is he's to kind of drive you up as well, rather than try and take you down.
Yeah.
I suppose because we're so used to playing at an amateur level, and fellas are kind of looking after themselves as they go into teams, it's a lot different.
Yeah, the older lads in the team have been on the other side as well, so they know that it can be daunting for some fellas speaking up. So they're just trying to encourage you. They're trying to make you feel like you belong straight away.
Would there ever be a situation now where, say, you weren't playing the weekend, but they're still asking your opinion on inside the meetings?
100%. All the out halves would be in a game plan meeting.
All right.
And there'd be often weekends, say, I wasn't picked, but I'd have an opinion, and that might affect the move we're going to do for the weekend. And there's different fellas suggesting different things all the time.
I know your role mightn't be massive in a squad, but sure, that brings massive.
No matter what your role is, you have to understand you're adding value, and you just have to add the most value you can in whatever, because you can't control if you're picked or not. You just have to add as much as you can regardless of that,
Is it all rugby from 6 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock at night, or is there anything else that you think about or do or get up to?
I'm living in a house in Limerick with three other lads playing for Munster. But we try not to speak too much about it when we come home. To be fair, even breaks in the day in Munster, you're not really talking about rugby. It's kind
of
like you're on for an hour, you have an hour downtime. You're not really.
It's like being in college.
Exactly. You'd be talking about it a bit, but once you come home, then we're always playing. We got a dartboard recently, so we're flat out at darts. We'd be on the PlayStation, like, whatever, do you know, mad going for coffee.
I was going to say, deadly at FIFA,
yeah. Yeah, 2K, basketball.
You haven't brought out a great rugby game since that 08, 08 one.
Rugby World Cup,
yeah. Yeah, that was a great game, right? They struggled to bring out a good one of those.
Jake, just in terms of, like, obviously you've played, what's it called now, Rebo Direct or Celtic League or whatever. Yeah. But talk to me about the difference between that and a big European game in Thomond. Like, is the dressing room different? Are you meeting up a bit earlier?
There's a big emphasis on not changing the routine. Like, so no matter what game you're playing week to week, you have to prepare the exact same. You have to treat it as the exact same. Like, because like for me, if I'm playing against, for example, a perceived weaker team, it's not like I'm going to put in less effort. Like, because it's my chance to play. So I'm going to put everything into it.
Yeah.
If there are differences... Like, not really, to be honest. Like, everyone knows, okay, there's more at stake here, but you're still going back to your routine, what you're doing every week. Like, just because it's a big game, you know, even playing whatever level, you're not going to try and do something that you don't always do. You know, I think the best players just are always doing what they're doing day to day. And they're
simple
not,
things, right?
Yeah,
but do you see a difference in, like, Jesus, whoever is a bit louder now today? Do you get a feeling, like, on your European nights?
Sometimes, like... Sometimes you see fellas getting a little bit more hyped up, and that can go well for them, or you know.
See, now your first time you heard Peter Mahoney giving a team talk or putting the fear of God into you, like, did you get a buzz off that? Like, just an honest question.
You still get a buzz off it, like, he's so respecting, he's such a good speaker.
Yeah.
That, like, every time someone like him speaks, your ears pick up a bit and
you're listening.
You're mad to know what's he thinking or what's he saying.
Yeah.
Like, fellas like that, like, that are so well respected and well established, you're mad to learn from them, so the more you can hear from them, the better.
Yeah.
But even coming down the bus, like, is there, John, when you see the fans around, like, it must be some feeling, like.
What's it called? Some fellas say, geez, like, they'd be on the bus, the earphones in, they're all focused, like, ready to go. I'd love to swap places with your man in the pints there. Like,
I understand. I'm going to be under severe pressure here today.
Yeah.
And every time I touch the ball, I better not drop it.
Yeah.
Whereas I'd love to be sinking pints, like.
For me, it's like, it's such a privilege to be on the bus that, like.
Yeah, true.
You know, just people have different perspectives on it, like. You know.
That's one I have as well for you, right? How do you find separating, because a lot of your identity has become rugby, right?
Yeah.
So how do you separate, like, do you know, Jake Flannery from Bancher, from Jake Munster player, and do you find it difficult to go into shop that, now you spoke, you feel a lot of pride in it as well, but like you're going to the shop downtown, you're going to Dunn's or wherever you go, and the first time, you know, somebody's going to see you and they're going to obviously go, there's Jake Flannery or whatever, like, and they're going to go, well, how do you go? Like, do you find constantly getting asked about it or talk? Do you find it? Do you get bored of it a bit? Or
no? In fairness, my friends and my family are pretty good at separating the two. My girlfriend's brilliant. Like, she knows exactly when I'm in the mood to talk about rugby or I'm no interest.
Not,
you know. And my family are pretty good too. Like, of course, people are going to ask questions, but they're only coming from a good place. You know.
Yeah.
And they're interested.
They take massive pride in the town as well. Like, I mean, you're the most recent Tipperary town area person to win anything, you know, in rugby, so there's definitely a massive pride as well.
And you were Grand Marshal at the Tipperary town parade.
I was, I still get slagged about that.
That's first put on the CV.
But just in terms of your career then so far, Jake, talk to me about the sacrifices. Has it been easy to make sacrifices? I mean, it's easy to look back now, but during the time, 18th, 21st, whatever other birthday parties or celebrations, how do you feel about making sacrifices like
that? At the time, for me, it was like, I've such an opportunity here, like, I'd be nuts to not give this my all. So I never really struggled with the sacrifice. It was like, I'm so hungry and desperate to succeed, and I still am that way, that if I have to give up a few points on a Friday night, like, it's not the end of the world. Like, I can have a few points in a while, like, you know, when I'm retired or whatever.
And that's fair enough. But do you ever get kind of pressure then from we'll say your peers that might say, why isn't he here?
There's a bit of that. Like, how will you come on?
Imagine I'm playing at Munster the weekend.
Yeah, but even well, that's fair enough. Even on the way
to never throw that around, not.
Not around there this weekend.
I know, there's a bit of slagging or whatever. Oh, typically, you know, your man can't make it again. But I try and meet the boys whenever I can. They get it, like, you know.
Yeah, I'd say you get your... I look from the outside in, I see a lot of these, even from amateur level. For a couple of years, there was these big, long, especially in DJ, drinking bans. Yeah. So fellas not drinking for 5-6 months. I'm sure that doesn't happen anymore, and you get your little drinking opportunities.
Social. Like, if you're going 4 weeks on the bounce of games, and then you have a break for a week or two, like, at the end of that block, there might be a chance to go for a few points there.
Yeah.
And that's always brilliant, like, brilliant crack.
Exactly. You're not going teetotal for 6 months.
No, like, it's not like that anymore.
Those days are over, I think, like, yeah.
Did you have an initiation to get into Munster team?
I used to sing a song on the bus, all right. I was
brutal. What did you sing? The Galty Mountain Boy.
Sweet Caroline, I think. That's brutal enough now, because you're a young fella. You might know all the lads that well.
Big
heads looking down the bus at you. Oh,
yeah. But does it work then? Does it work?
Yeah,
you feel a lot more comfortable then once you've
embarrassed yourself once, it gets a lot easier then, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's on every team. So we did that in Rockwell, on minor buses, like... Yeah. Get the new man up to sing, like.
How will it be, Sweet Caroline, then, when you make your next move?
I don't know. I'll see. Might get something better.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And what's your holiday then? We say, do you finish? When does it kind of finish?
So it's kind of awkward, like, because you don't know when you finish, because it'll depend on how far Munster go. So you kind of have to just plan as if we're going to get to the final of the Pro 14. Exactly, and then holidays will come after that, and it's funny for me this year now, because I have to wait and see how far Ulster get as well.
Yeah.
So, like, the way both teams are going, they probably go far enough in the competition. So, I just kind of have to wait and see and try book something, then head off to Croatia or something.
And yeah, when do you join up with them, actually?
So, I'll probably get three or four weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Completely off. And then I'll try and head up to Belfast, get the house settled and stuff, maybe a week before I'm in.
Yeah, how's the house situation?
Have to figure that out. I knew a few fellas up there, so I'm chatting to them. I'm trying to just sort something handy.
But in terms of inspirations, you're as a young lad looking up. All right, fair enough. But there's your sister.
Yeah,
is on the rise. You're obviously inspiring her now as well.
I was only actually in Scotland yesterday watching her. She was playing against Wales, the women's under 18.
Proud mum and daddy.
Oh yeah, no, she's brilliant though. I'd say she'd be better than me, like, no joke. Yeah. She's going really well, and she's a real hard worker, like, you know, she puts everything into it too. So no, I hope it goes well for her.
Of course, Alan is inside as well.
Yeah, how's
he getting
that? He's going really well as well. He's playing for Shannon every week, so I've got to play with him a bit this year, and sure, it's great crack, like, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing is, if I give out to a fella on the Shannon team, like, he's more likely to take it, whereas if I give out to Alan, he's more likely to look around and go, "Will you fuck off?"
Don't listen to your brother.
No,
you
no.
You listen to anyone else. Never. Like,
and is there a little bit of pressure going back playing with Shannon? Is there an onus on you to, I don't know, be a bit louder in the dressing room?
There is, but I'd be kind of naturally involved in communicating and trying to drive the game plan as a 10 anyway. So
no,
I kind of approach it with a bit of freeness, like, go out, express yourself. I don't try and play differently for Munster or Shannon. It's just go out and play how you play, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that, so if you're with Shannon this week, are you training with them on a Thursday night?
So you'll train Thursday with Munster and Shannon. But so you mightn't do the full, you mightn't do the say if there's a bit of contact on the Thursday, you mightn't do that with Shannon. Just so you're not completely wrecked by Saturday.
But that's good that, like, you're not just walking in
airbag
on a Saturday and saying, where am I going?
Pat O'Connor is actually the coach. He's from Cashel. He's been good. Like, there's an expectation on you. If you're a Munster fella, you have to be around a fair bit in Shannon so that you're up to speed with the calls.
Yeah.
And you're not strolling in on the Saturday, taking the place of a fella that's been training all year.
Because
you can imagine, like, it's kind of like the way I'd see it was be like Banshee and County Minor fella strolling back in, getting the place where he's not training. Like, you should be at training, you should be.
I like that integration. Like, that's a really good idea.
No one's above anyone just because you're playing whatever, like, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's the same.
Yeah.
And just obviously in the early part, you've played with a few good players and you've played against a few handy players as well, obviously. Is there any player that sticks out in your mind where you were either on a field with them or against them and looked at them and goes, "Oh my God, damn, he's deadly. He just is after doing something silly there."
Shane Ryan for Banshee was unreal football.
I wasn't expecting the football.
I swear to God, no. I thought football first. But he was class. I remember under 14, we were playing Cork. I think he broke his hand and he he was playing full forward, the ball went into him, he caught it with one hand round the full back and stuck it. He was different level now as a footballer.
Geez, you had a couple of names in that team, so like in terms of talent, it was a talented team, that team. Like,
I was only telling Fergie earlier on that like on that 15 team that I was involved with, like you had Jack Harney, who's now playing with Tip, Conal Kendi, now playing with Tip, Jake, Shane Ryan, lads, good few,
it's a good team, in fairness,
it was a strong team. Who actually was on that team, just to name drop him, was Jake Morris.
Jake Morris, he was a footballer,
phenomenal footballer.
Yeah, he was.
John, really, really good footballer.
Yeah. And in terms of like maybe your rugby career, then like, is there any player that you really look at? Do you look at a player and you see him doing a few things in the field or against him? You're kind of in awe of him. You're going, oh my god, they're deadly all together. Like,
Dale Ende, he's different now. He plays like he's about 5 seconds longer than everyone else. It's like he's slow-mo. Like,
yes.
He can just see things way quicker. And it's not like he's running the field every time, but it's just the way he picks passes or the way he steps. And it's just so consistent. It's every day in training.
He can read the game really well.
Yeah, he's very impressive now.
And his lines are brilliant, aren't they? And they're not... it's not like he cuts one of those old-school 12 lines that is a really hard line. It's kind of a little shimmy to hit. It's a slight line, isn't
it? Yeah, he's like, he's very good at little things you mightn't see, but if you watch closely, it makes an awful difference.
And a nice fella as well.
All the boys are sound.
But like, in fairness, Munster at the moment, like, there's a lot of legends in there. Some of the stuff they've won, like with Ireland, like Earls and O'Mahony.
Them fellas, when they talk, you definitely listen. Like Earlsy has so much experience. Like, you'll learn a lot of Earlsy. Even like Andrew Conway, he teaches a lot. Like, they've just so much knowledge on the game. Because they've studied it. Like, say, however long I've been watching the game, they've been watching it 10 years longer and at a high level. So,
I like that about rugby, that you actually sit down and have a chat about it. It's something that probably, I'm sure it's there at county level, hurling and football, but I think it definitely needs to be integrated more. Definitely into the club season club scene, because I think you can learn so much off even just a chat like this.
You can, like, and the thing with sport I found from playing football and rugby and whatever, it's just the seeing the same pictures on and on. So if a fella's coming hard at you might do something different than when he's backing off of you, say in rugby or football. It's just, and when you have conversations and you see the same picture over and over again, you get good at manipulating it. Like, so I'll give you a good example. When I first came in, Earlsy is very good at telling lies. So say if he's up in the line.
You said that with straight face.
Sorry, telling lies. I mean, on the pitch. Right. No. So
I was like, Jesus.
When I say telling lies, say if he's a winger and he's up, I'll look, I see he's up. Right, when I catch the ball, I put a kick in. The next thing he catches it, he's standing under it 30 yards back.
Yeah.
And I chatted to him. I said, how did you know I was going to kick that? He said, I wanted you to kick it because I stood flat, and the minute you looked to catch the ball, I ran. And then he's exactly expecting where to go.
Yeah.
So as I've gone on, I've started getting better at telling lies. So I see him flat, I look as if I'm going to kick it, and then I catch and I throw it. And he's saying to me, that's good, you got me there. And that kind of battle goes on between the 10 and the winger all the time. He's trying to lie to me with his body language. And that's something that when I came in first, I wouldn't have really known about that. You know, that's a brand new thing to me.
Reading the players in front of you, because, and reading each other as well. That was something we were looking at. I was looking at a couple of years ago in a team I was coaching, and we started focusing on that. And it's great to bring it up. A lot of the time we don't understand the importance of being able to read players, read your own players as well, and read the game. And that's, I suppose, some of the education you're getting now off older boys.
Definitely.
But it must bring some confidence that, like, a couple of those fellas we mentioned, they have nearly 100 caps for Ireland.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you must go out on a Saturday, whoever you're playing, and just play with no fear, because you're training with the best.
Exactly. When you come in at the start, it can be a bit daunting. It's like, geez, that's Keith Earls opposite me. But as time goes on, it's like, he's just one of the fellas you're training against. He's just one of the team. It just feels like club training. Like, you know, when you first go in, it's daunting, but as time goes on, it just feels like I'm playing for Fecal, I'm playing for whatever.
You actually made a good point there, Dec, about playing with fear. Is there ever, like, at the point in the early parts that you did play with fear, and is that now eliminated? You're going out now with free rein?
I've kind of always tried to play with free rein anyway, because I feel like that's one of my strengths, not playing on edge. Yeah. Like, I'd always be very calm before matches.
Yeah.
I'd always just try and play whatever's happening right now, and not thinking about, geez, I missed a tackle 10 minutes ago. Geez, I missed a kick. I might miss the next kick. It's more like, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
And that kind of gives you a bit of freedom, as in, like, you don't have to worry about anything else except what's going on.
A lot of people speak about that, yeah, and it's easier said than done, but yeah, I think if you can do that, it's huge. If you can leave those mistakes behind you. I think a lot of the time, myself, when I play, I'm a lot of time focused on,
yeah,
the ball I didn't catch or the kick that went straight out. And
yeah,
I definitely think it damages you. Like, if you can, honestly, without... and actually do it, not just, yeah, say it, leave the mistake behind you. Geez, if you can do that, you're halfway there. Like,
it goes, yeah, back to Paul O'Connor's thing on Schmidt, and just play in front of
play
your
the
face.
Moment, yeah,
play the moment, like, you
play
know,
the moment, yeah,
and just forget about everything.
Yeah, because I think it's easy being a professional because you have so much time in the week. So I do whatever 100 kicks a week, say, for example. I go out on a Saturday, then knowing whoever I'm playing for, I've done 100 kicks this week. Like, why are you worrying about kicking?
Yeah.
Just like, do what you normally do, and if you miss, you miss, but just you can take confidence that the work is done behind you and you're just going out playing then.
So from Monday morning to Friday evening, you're just ticking boxes, really, aren't you?
Kinda, that's kinda it. Like, you're ticking off, oh, I made 20 tackles this week,
yeah,
I hit 10 rucks extra, whatever. Whatever you need to do as your position, you're ticking it off, and then on a Saturday it's like you let that go because it's done now, and then you just have to, it's not like you're thinking about how you're going to kick it. It just happens in the match once you've the habit built.
I think you spoke about that in terms of selection as well, which is really good.
Yeah.
Just before the podcast, you were kind of saying that you leave selection sort itself out,
yeah,
because it'd be very easy, I think, for you to be sitting at home on a Thursday night and going, right, if he gets injured,
mm,
and if he has a, yeah, shite game, and if I do this then in training,
yeah,
and then if he's away, or I'll play.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have no control over that.
Yeah.
So you
and
have
to
leave a goal.
You hear everyone saying, like, oh, you can look after what you can control. But,
yeah,
like, I see it, some fellas, even in the pro system, like, they waste energy on, geez, I'm not picked. Geez, I trained poorly today. But, like, it's all about what's happening now, what's going,
yeah,
on now. And that's like, all you can focus on. That's just the best way I can find.
Actually, Fergal said it a while ago, and it has to be complimented, as your majority.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with, because you obviously play in such a public eye, like, with criticism?
Yeah.
How have you dealt with criticism, either from a coach or from some sort of media?
I think it's understanding where it's coming from. Like, I remember playing Irish under-20s, there might be a few articles and there's a few comments like, oh, your man's useless or whatever. And, like,
yeah,
that's, I'm able to take that because I know that's coming from a fella who may not have played at a high level. He's just trying to comment. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it might upset.
He gets paid for that. Stuff.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
But it might upset people close to me. And that's upsetting. Like, you don't
yeah,
want to see that. Like, but
yeah, 100%.
I wouldn't get a massive amount of abuse, like, you know. And if it's from a coach, then you know, oh, he's only trying to improve me. So
mm-hmm,
it's like, it's not personal. And they say that all the time. Like, if they're coming to you saying, Jake, you need to work on your pass or whatever, it's not personal. Like, he's just trying to make me better so the team is better.
The last thing you want, I suppose, is someone outside your circle, outside your team, telling you what you should be doing.
Yeah, and that happens too. Like, fellas outside your circle will be coming telling you what you're doing wrong, and you kind of sometimes have to take that with a pinch of salt. Like, it's like taking advice from the right areas. So from the,
yeah,
the right people in my,
yeah,
circle that want me to do well,
yeah,
they're not criticizing me for the sake of it. You know,
yeah,
they're,
yeah, yeah,
coming
trying
from
to push
a place.
You on, like,
exactly. Yeah.
Like, just because,
yeah,
you're a Munster season ticket holder and you've been to every Munster game for the last 30 years doesn't give you the right to come up and tell me what I should,
yeah,
be
well,
doing,
like,
or should not be doing. Like,
fans have a right to have opinions.
To have an opinion, like,
yeah,
yeah,
course,
yeah,
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 yeah.
But, like, at the,
yeah,
end of the day, all the team can do is worry about what's the team's process.
Yeah.
Can we do that to the best of the ability? Because if you're worrying about every opinion, you're like, someone's going to be upset. Like, you can't please everyone.
Well, that's
so,
it. When you spoke there about not playing with fear, like, if you were to play with everybody's opinion or
yeah,
your head, like, you're never going to make the kick that you want to kick.
Exactly.
You're never going to make the pass
yeah,
you want to pass. You're trying to please
one
the
fella
or
say,
whoever all the time.
Why is he passing that? And the other fella say, why is he not running that?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's
yeah,
decision.
So,
I think decision making is one of the biggest parts of any sport, and it's
yeah,
and it's hard. It's a lot of it's subjective, isn't it? Like,
and you have to play with no fear to even get to
yeah,
that level as well. Like.
So, you know, right, do you ever wake up in the morning, this, I don't know now, am I up for this training session? This is training session number 50 or whatever. Yeah. I know you can't say it now because I'm your coach. This, but you, like, surely players, sometimes you're not 100% for every training session. You might feel a little bit low. 100%. I'm just saying, Munster Rugby, is there somebody, I'm sure you have sports psychologists.
Oh, yeah, we've full-time.
Maybe the mood is a little bit down at the moment.
We have a full-time psychologist and she's on point. Like, she'd nearly see it in you before you say it. Like,
I pull you aside and go, we need to have a chat.
No, not even. Like, she'd just have a quiet word and say, you all good? Yeah. What's up? And you might say, not up for today or whatever. Like, I'm not great at talking to psychologists. I kind of just laser in on myself. Like, you know. Like, there's some mornings you wake up and you think, get through this now.
Yeah.
But once you get up and you get going, that kind of disappears. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
But it's like any kind of job, I'd say. Yeah, some mornings you're flying, you're mad for it. Other mornings you're a bit slower. Like,
yeah, you just can't be hopping off the side every day.
You can't be expected to be hopping off the side every day. Either,
exactly. Yeah. And there's understanding there that, right, he's a bit slow this morning, but by the time we get to the pitch, he's on the money. Like, you can have a slow morning, but the time we hit the gym, you're 100% in the gym, you're 100% in the pitch. And that, like, after that, there's times in between where you're downtime or you're not as motivated. Like, that's normal. Like.
I think, I suppose, you build up so much credit having put in so many training sessions, so many matches, that if you are maybe not at 100 or if you're at 90-80%, your coaches are understanding of that. Like.
Yeah, and there's different fellas have different approaches. Like, say, for example, someone like Zeebo, like, he's be a bit more relaxed. It's not because he's not as motivated, it's just his way.
Like,
and they always say you have to be yourself. Like, so some fellas are intense, some fellas are chilled. I'd be fairly calm, but when I'm on, I'm probably very intense. Like, that's just the way I approach it. But there's space there for you to be yourself in whatever way you need to approach it. Like,
and when you wake up for training, or whatever, I know I keep
waking up.
No, I'm just trying to set the scene. Like, before you go to train and whenever you go over to get your kit, and the Munster kit is there, whatever. Do you ever sometimes go, jeez, this is mental. What am I doing? I'm putting my Munster gear on. Like, this is...
Yeah.
Do you ever get a bit of surreal off that?
Really. You're just so immersed in it. That probably doesn't happen. Like,
doesn't happen anymore.
Might happen in a few years. I look back and say, geez, that was great, wasn't it? Like, I got the opportunity to do that. But when you're in it, it's kind of just normal, you know?
Yeah.
And what kind of fella are you in and around? Because, obviously, like, Fergie sets the scene. I was listening to Conor Murray before, and he said, obviously, Craig Casey is his direct competition now at the moment. And he said he's just so intense.
Yeah.
He said, you're going to train. He wants to be the best coffee maker in there.
Yeah, he's a lunatic.
Joe,
yeah.
Like, are you like that? Joe, you hear stories of, I don't know, I remember just Davy Fitzgerald, when he started with Clare. He used to go down and he used to bait a ball off a wall because his direct opposition was driving past. He was a postman every morning.
And he'd see
him.
Yeah.
So he'd be saying, jeez, this fella's mad at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Craig does look intense, to be fair.
But, like, do you kind of be like, I'll be in now before Joey and he'll see me in first?
I'm not like that.
Morning, Joey. I'm here already.
You hear kick's done all right, Joe.
You hear stories like Michael Jordan and all them.
Yeah.
Lunatics for competition. Like, I'd be extremely competitive, like, on the pitch, but off the pitch I'd be fairly calm. Like, I'd be very laid back. Like, if your man wants to make me a coffee to prove something, like, fair play, I'll take the coffee. You know, I'd be good friends with Craig. Like, he's very competitive as well, but, like, he's a normal enough fella. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's sound out, like.
But he does, as you say, he does look like when playing with Ireland or something. Do you know, he doesn't look like he's afraid of
he's
anything.
He's very passionate, and he's not afraid.
Very confident.
He seems very confident. Yeah.
Do you have, like, an outside the training field routine as well? Like, do you know, because obviously, what makes a player is watching you in the training field. Yeah. But I suppose things like, do you go for walks? Do you go for your own swims or runs? Like, what's your kind of your own bit that you do on the side?
Like, we've access to the Castletroy Park Hotel in Limerick, swimming pool, sauna, jacuzzi.
Yeah.
So I'd go there once or twice a week. That's ideal. Like, the jacuzzi sorts out. Other than that, I'm kind of just like, you meet a few of the boys for coffee on an off day, taking a handy in the evenings. Do something with my girlfriend, maybe head off on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's like, it's not hectic, do you know?
Yeah. I suppose people think, don't they, a professional sports player, that it's like full that on, like, full on the whole time, but it's really, a lot of downtime as well.
Exactly.
Like.
Yeah.
And you probably have to get used to that downtime, do you?
And you have to get good at not going mad thinking about rugby all the time, like, because, do you know, you have to take your downtime when it comes to, like.
It's like any job, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. So,
any questions then?
One question, a couple of questions came. The question box was about your time when you were in Rockwell.
Yeah.
Who at that age, that level, was a player maybe that you or had a good challenge against, or maybe it was against another team? What, at that level, what was a player that stands out?
Let me think. Ryan O'Sullivan from Cashel, he was a very good out half. We did a bit of a battle in school who was going to play. Who else stands out? No, I don't know. I was just focused on myself a lot, I suppose.
Yeah.
Even playing football, like, I was always just, I'm going to be the best I can be, and if that, see how that goes, you know.
I never
really focused on other people. In Rockwell, I would have probably looked up to someone like Bill Johnson. He was 3 or 4 years older than me, and before him there was JJ Hanrahan. Yeah. So they were like the Rockwell tens who had made it. So I was like, geez, that'd be cool to be one of them. So like I probably would have looked up to them, and I remember Bill did a kicking session with me when he was a few years older than me. I thought that was class. JJ came in and did a kicking session with me, and I'd still be friendly enough with him. I'd be able to send him a text, say, how are you getting on?
And
who would you be close to inside, would say, with Munster?
Who's the squad?
So I'm living with Keenan Knox, Jack Daly and Sean French, so I'd be very close to them. I'd be very close to Craig. Josh Witcherly I'd be very friendly with. Other than that, it's not really clicky. Like, you know, you kind of come in and whoever's sitting at the table, you sit down with them and you'd have the same crack. Like, it's very good that way. Like,
So you don't really see the difference between the older lads and the younger lads? Or
When I first came in, like, you'd be slower to slag someone like Stephen Archer. Like, But nowadays, Jesus, you get stuck into him, like, and there's no problem.
The first time somebody told me that you looked up to slag you, like, is it?
I don't want to
hold the ground.
I don't want to. Yeah, hold your ground, but don't want to slag back too hard because you'd be seen as a CTI. Then you can't take it, like, you know. You have to take a slag. It's like any team.
Last you said for a fella, like, take a slag.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah.
So Fergal.
Yeah. No. Thanks a million, Jake. That's been absolutely fantastic, and thanks for taking the time out to speak to us. I suppose. Yeah, the one last question I wanted to ask you was a lot of part of being a good player, I suppose, is being able to self-assess. So I just wanted to looking forward, like, what are kind of the things you're looking to work on in your game and what you think your strengths are as well?
So growing up...
Because this is an interview.
Okay. growing up, I would have always kind of been fairly good at running the ball, fairly fast, good at stepping people. So the things I'd had to work on were the contact stuff. Like, when I was young, I wasn't mad for the contact, tackling, rucking, like, but you just work on it and the weeks build up and you just get more comfortable. Goal kicking as well. When I was in Rockwell, I missed a few important kicks, and that only makes you better, because it's just reps. I've worked hard on goal kicking, worked hard on contact work, worked hard in the gym, because sure, Decky, you remember I was under 15, I was only a skinny fella. Still skinny, but less so.
Less skinny.
Harder to knock.
Yeah, slightly.
Yeah, how do you find that, like, your diet and stuff? Do you find it hard to keep the kegs on, keep the kgs on?
I'd fall away to nothing if I wasn't on top of the diet. Like, some fellas might struggle to lose weight, but I'm a hard gainer.
Bit like our Danny Harry, like.
Yeah. 2 years. Oh, you get it right.
Yeah. Just a bit of extra work being prepared with meals and plan.
Yeah.
I'll have a snack here and there, I'll have a smoothie, whatever. It's just that extra bit of preparation.
Actually, do you ever pick out?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Jeez, yeah. I'm bad now. After a game I'd have a McDonald's, I would.
Yeah.
I have to admit. I'd give myself a large 9-nugget meal.
Paddy the Baddy McDonald's meal. What's Paddy the Baddy?
But you have to be mindful then during the summer that you're not going back, and it's going to take me 6 weeks now to get.
Yeah, well, like, the way I see it, it's kind of like, if I'm going back unfit and heavy or light, I'm only hurting myself.
Yeah.
Like, because where I am now, I'm hopefully I'm trying to break in to a new club, so I want to be as fit as I can, as strong as I can, and as sharp as I can when I go in. So I'll enjoy, say if I have 4 weeks off, I'll enjoy the first 2 weeks. Yeah. And then the next 2 weeks is kind of like a pre-season where you're trying to get as ready as you can. So you're going in, like, attacking it as opposed to surviving the first few weeks of pre-season.
Yeah. Great way of putting it. Yeah. And I said, there's plenty of fellas around Tipperary that don't be attacking it.
how hard is pre-season, we say, in a rugby?
They build it up. So say if it's 8 weeks long, it'll build up. So week five might be the hardest. So week one's always kind of hard, no matter how fit you are. In week one, you'll do the fitness test. We do a Bronco. And that's cat, no matter how fit you are. And then they kind of make it harder progressively. So it's never ridiculously hard, but it's progressively harder.
When you say week five is the hardest.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on in week five?
Say if it's two sets of whatever running, week three will be three sets. If it's three sets of six, week four will be three sets of eight. And then week five might be four sets of six. It'll just be the highest volume. You just know going into week five, if it's normally an 8 week program, you know week five this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
But you normally get a break after that.
Okay.
So it might go 5 weeks on, a week off, and then 2 weeks and then in. Do you know, that's kind of how it works. So you work hard for this week, you'll earn your week off next week.
Fair enough. And do fellas be keeled over like after week one when they come back after the 8 week break, or?
Not really. No, like fellas are fairly professional from my experience anyway. Like, there's a few fellas a small bit heavier, small bit lighter, whatever. And they'll always be able to get through it, though. You know, they're never a ridiculously bad name.
Actually, what is your target weight per in kilos?
So I'm 91 kilos now. Ideally, I get to 92, 93. But I'm never going to be a massive out half. Like, my attributes are, I'm fairly fast sometimes.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that, so I don't want to get too big. And you know.
But the 4 to 6 week break is ideal. Like, they say 6 weeks is your...
Yeah.
Anything beyond that,
you come back. Back mentally fresh after four weeks. Like, get a good holiday away or whatever, and you're flying it. Then you're mad to go for the next season.
I suppose just finally, Jake, we'll have a couple of young lads, I suppose, looking to get a career in whatever sport, or hoping to be successful in sport, and to be looking for a few tips. What would be, you know, your number one tip, I suppose, for young lads like Chilly Hogan, who's over in the corner there listening in? Might want a tip or two. You know, what would be your tips for young lads in sport growing up in terms of trying to make it professionally if they're kind of on the cusp? Maybe lads are making county teams at the moment. Yeah. Maybe lads are getting into development squads. What would be your piece of advice to us?
I'd be whatever resources are available to you, try and make the most of them. So no matter who is coaching you, always be looking for feedback. So if they say to you, oh, your tackling's not good enough or whatever, get a plan together. Right, I'm going to tackling for 2 or 3 weeks. And then we'll come back and I'll talk to the coach and say, okay, what's next? So always be looking for feedback. Yeah. Always be pulling on your resources. So if you've a gym nearby, if you can get stuck into that, do. And get as much knowledge as you can, I would say. Like, always be looking for more things where you can improve. That's kind of one thing I would say.
That's
a great point, actually, Tom. Sorry, Dick, to get and talk to the coach. Like, because we'd say when I first started playing soccer, very young, like, you know, I probably wasn't making the team as much as I would have liked.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish I did ask the coach at the time, so what can I do?
Why not? It? Like, do you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because if you don't ask, you never know that.
And it's not going to the coach being like, oh, why the F aren't I being picked or whatever from a bad place. It's just like, okay, I'm not being picked. What can I do to make sure I am picked?
Give me a workout.
Yeah. So you're always just trying to build on your game. Like,
Jesus, the coaches must be bombarded so in pre-season of fellas saying, here, look, maybe last season I didn't get as many games. What can I do?
I'm sure, And that's just kind of part of their job. Because fellas will always be, definitely professional, they're always looking to improve.
Yeah.
So you're just always looking for feedback. Like.
Okay, that's great. Thanks a million, Jake. And I want to say thanks very much for that, because I know when Danny reached out to you, you were like, no bother straight away. And it's very easy for someone like yourself to kind of say, no, I'm too busy. So we really do appreciate you, especially with a local podcast. It's not like you're getting anything off doing this. You know, you're just giving us, I suppose, a bit of chat about your career so far. And I know you're very proud Banch, a Tipperary County man, and you were keen to kind of get your story across a little bit, and we really do appreciate you taking the time out to do that. Wish you all the best in the future with Ulster. I suppose from having this chat with you this morning, I think no doubt you have all the attributes, you have the skill set, and you definitely have the mindset as well to etch out a career for yourself up there or push on a bit more. And hopefully we see you in the green of Ireland at senior level soon.
Well, thanks a million for having me, lads. It was great crack, it was good old chat. So delighted to be on.
Cheers. Thanks, Jake.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million.